Okay.
Wait 4 seconds. Takes a while. Okay.
Okay, today is May 9th, 2017, and I'm Wilma Allen, representing the Amelia Island Museum of History for the Heritage Project that we're doing, interviewing a variety of people in Bernardino Beach. Today we're going to be talking to Mrs. Maple Pratt. Mrs. Pratt, would you like to say hello?
Hello.
Mrs. Pratt was born in Jacksonville. Can you tell us about where you're from and when you moved here and just your beginnings?
Well, according to Mama, Grandmama, and the rest of them stories, and my birth certificate, I was born in Jacksonville, Florida, February 24th, 1922. I remember very vividly, and it's amazing because I was so young, living in my mother's aunt's house. Mm-hmm. I remember that well. It was on a street called Canal Street, West Jacksonville, at Beaver Street area. That's where we were living. I remember this. My mother would go to work at Grapefruit Factory. I don't know where my daddy worked, but I know he went to work too. And I remember an old baby carriage that my brother used to ride me around the dirt yard and my aunt hollering, "You go drop that baby, stop that." These things. I remember going to school at a church.
Church.
But all the kids were in the sanctuary, but you're in different sections according to your age. I hadn't got to first grade yet, so I was in this section with little children. I vividly remember one day I got spanked. I did not want to go to school. And my mother made my brother hold my hand because we couldn't walk to school the one fall. And I was screaming, "I don't want to go to school," and biting him on the hand and pulling it out. It's just a terrible little girl. And she walked down that road with a switch.
Oh.
She always broke her switches off a peach tree switch.
The best kind, huh?
And I said, "Mama, there's plenty of switches around here. Why do you always get a peach?" She said, "Because they don't break. You can, they'll bend, but they won't break." And she started right here. And up my thighs with that switch, and I start screaming, "Buster, wait on me, I'm going to school, I'm going to school."
Well, now
little things like that.
Yeah. Now, you have an unusual name, Maple. How did you get that name?
Oh, that's a story all by itself.
That's a beautiful name.
That's a story. My daddy was to run out here in Yulee. And Yulee then, as I can picture it, from what they used to tell me, what I can remember, was just a wooded area. Mm-hmm. Very woody area. Nothing like it was now. Or neither was Bernardino. And the day I was born in my grandmother's house, my granddaddy planted two trees. One was a maple and one was an oak. When he came back, I was here. The aunts and the uncles and the whoever's were in the room deciding what to call me. I would think they'd have done that long time ago.
Good thing they didn't name you Oak. Maple.
So, my granddaddy says, "I just planted a maple tree and an oak tree. Name of Maple, May Oak." My mother told me this story. She said, "And I told your grandpa, I didn't care if they called you Maple, but they was not going to hang May Oak on my baby. And nobody going to call my other girl May Oak." So then they tried to call me Maple May, and she said, "No, you're still trying to associate it with that oak tree. I don't want it anywhere in there."
So what was your last name?
Russell.
Russell.
They named me Maple El Claudia Russell. Yeah. My mama's daddy was Cuban.
I see.
And the El Claudia came from one of his sisters. My mother was from an Indian mother and an Irish dad. I showed a picture of what she'd be. And my dad's black. So I'm just
a melting pot.
Yeah, that's okay. I love it.
And so you said your mother and father, your mother, what kind of work did she do? I think she said...
She was working at a grapefruit factory at that
time. Oh, that's right, that's right. And you didn't
she moved here, she worked in the shrimp factories.
Mm-hmm. How did they come to move here?
The Depression. From the little I remember, and with a lot, they told my mom, she'd tell us everything as we were growing up. This was my stepdad and I. My daddy died. I was 1 year, 10 months old. My brother was 3. And she married, my brother was 5. And I can't remember how old I was. I could figure if I wanted to do the math. And we went back to move with my mother's aunt in Jacksonville. And she worked. What was I trying to tell you? I was moved here.
Yeah, I had to come.
He worked at the lumber, a lumber mill in Jacksonville. It closed down. Like everything was closing down because of the Depression. Mm-hmm. So there was no work. But his brother owned a shrimp boat. And in Fernandina, fish and shrimp and the pork plant that's made fertilized were the main sources of income for people to get jobs.
Mm-hmm.
So by his brother owning a shrimp boat, he says, move to Fernandina and work on my boat with me. My grandma, my mother's mother, was here. She said, I've got to find y'all a house. She lived just across 14th Street, which once you passed there was all woods, just a path.
Mm-hmm.
And we moved right here in this park on Beach Street, and the little house was torn down. There was a railroad track all the way to the beach.
Wow, the trolley, I've seen mention of that. Mm-hmm.
That's how the street got named, Beach Street, transporting people to the beach.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we moved to that little house, and we lived there. About 6 or 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
But that's why we came to Vernon, so we could get a job.
Yeah, I was going to ask you at another time about the Depression years and what it was like. You were just a young person.
Oh,
but
yeah,
I guess
we got a lot. The schools, the jobs, the people.
Was your mother happy about moving to Fernandina Beach, or did it seem like real country?
I don't think she was, because she was so used to city life. I couldn't really say, but I doubt if she was.
Mm-hmm.
She always did some type of factory work. She never worked in homes. She always did some kind of factory work. And when she came here, she finally found she could get a job in a shrimp factory.
Oh.
They had shrimp factories downtown.
Mm-hmm.
And by her having long fingers, they used to pack cooked shrimp down there in glass jars, like glasses with lids and labels. Getting ready for shipping. But to work in that department, you had to have long fingers because you had to arrange those shrimp in that glass. There was two in the bottom, one tail turned that way, one just up the sides, they had to be turned down like that so it'd be pretty to tell people.
Yeah.
And then, then they had areas where some people did nothing but peel shrimp. I used to do that before school. Go to school and come back and head shrimp. Just pull her heads off.
Yeah.
After school.
Was that in grammar school?
No, when I was doing this, I was like, I guess sixth grade on up.
Mm-hmm.
All up to about maybe 10th. Then I started doing jobs like babysitting after school. Or keeping people cheering while they go out to a dance or a party. Mm-hmm. I was a famous babysitter.
You were?
Yeah, I got called like kids like me.
Because
I sit on the floor and play with them, you know, do kid stuff. They're like that.
Yeah. So you had a brother. Did you have any other brothers and sisters?
I had one half sister.
Mm-hmm.
She was my mother's child. She was born during the area after my mother died and before she remarried. After my daddy
died.
And before she remarried.
Uh-huh.
And she was, but she never lived with us. She visited us in Sunset. Well, most she lived with her daddy people, they raised her.
And your house, you said it was right on Beach Street.
Mm-hmm.
What was your house like?
You know where Division Street is?
Mm-hmm.
The two-story house?
Yeah.
Well, coming this way, the ballpark was always there.
Right.
Coming this way, there were two little houses which belonged to the people that owned the big house, which his name was Mr. Flowers. He was a black guy.
Mm-hmm.
It was... You walk in the house, the front door, there was a hall all the way out to the back door, and it opened out to a back porch.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. On that back porch was another door open into the kitchen. Going down that hall were two rooms. You go down the hall, there are two rooms over here. You go out the back door, and there's Roman's kitchen. It was a flush toilet. It was very unusual that day on the back porch. You didn't have to go out the yard to the outhouse.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of the kinds that the chain pulled down.
Yeah.
There was no handle or nothing, but it was a flush toilet. We thought we were in heaven. Because we always knew we were in the outhouse. And you always had to walk a good ways. And night you had to take a lantern, because you might come up on crawling.
Yeah. And what about the neighborhood? Was it pretty populated then?
The neighborhood was great to newcomers.
Mm-hmm.
They come over and see what they could do. Could they help you? They bring you pies, cakes, tickle a pot of beans. They bring you a big bowl of beans. The neighborhood was more like a family. If one mother worked and had kids, she'd have to worry about them. And she was halfway raising herself. She said, stay in the yard. Okay, the neighbors know your mama, the kind of mama I want to take care of you, want you to stay in the yard. So if you come out that yard, they're going to tell you, get back in the yard, there's no place to want you out.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to tell them, you ain't got my mama, you're going to tell me what. You're going back in the yard. Or that neighbor had the privilege to beat you up. She was expression. Because your mama gave them that privilege. Kids were much better, much behaved. They respected authority much better. Parents spent more time with their kids, teaching and raising them.
Yeah, I was going to ask about school and growing up when you, the emphasis on education and all. It sounds to me like your parents really, or your mother especially, from what you said, really encouraged you to go to school.
You were going to school, and you were going to, as they put it, I have a frog in my throat, mind that teacher. That was a good mama's motto. You go to school with it, I mean if you to mind your teacher. Don't you let me hear anything about your misbehavior. And she meant that, because then the teachers would come visit the parents about once every 3 months and talk to them, and parents would find out firsthand just how you were acting and what you were doing. It was no need in you coming to tell my mama I didn't do that, because she would ask you quick, are you trying to tell me this teacher lying? And if you thought that teacher was lying, you wasn't going to say it, because you know you better not call a grown person lying. Kids were under much better supervision. My mom believed in education. She didn't go any further than ninth grade. But Lord have mercy, she had this thing you call mother wit up here. Mama could teach you stuff that you could make a living and take care of yourself till you got 100. I'm living on some of it now. Because she taught me. She went to ninth grade.
Did she live a long life also?
No, she died at 38. My daddy died at 23.
Oh, my goodness.
Me and my brother just hung on each other.
Wow.
But thank God for all the stuff she taught us.
Yeah, wow. Sounds amazing. So, they were part of the community. You said they loved the neighborhood. And
oh, yeah,
all.
Beautiful.
What about the rest of the community? What was it like with where did you go to get your groceries? Did you grow a lot of your own things and make your own clothes
thing? Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, because money was very scarce. Very scarce. Money was so tight. And my mother was what you might call a miser. I hate to say that. There was nothing wrong with it for the right reason. If my daddy's shirt, I call my stepdaddy daddy, mm-hmm. If his shirt wore out, she clipped every button off that shirt and she put hers off. If one of her slips wore out and the lace was still good, she ripped that lace off and carefully rolled it up on a piece of cardboard or a piece of shoebox. She placed that stuff in a shoebox. If she needed lace or buttons, she did not go to A.S. Allen, who was the only department store we had. She went to her shoeboxes and her jars, her buttons and her ribbons. And Easter time, she would take an old hat, and she would wear her box with her flowers and ribbons, and she saved up other hat, and she would redecorate. She just had that in her. I do a lot of something. I take a lot of old stuff and redo it. Mm-hmm. Okay, she cooked. We did have backyard gardens. Mm-hmm. And then everybody got a backyard garden. But people were so free and so neighborly. If our okra came in, and I don't know if you know, but you got to cut okra regular. She told the neighbors, okay, time for okra. Come help yourself. They come over to pay another act. She didn't have to go out there. They cut the okra. If they had tomatoes came in, okay, the tomatoes are in. You go help those in. The men that work down on the docks, they bring big buckets of fish on them. Only one black family in my neighborhood had a phone.
Had a what?
A telephone.
Oh, telephone.
And we would go to her house, and she would call, tell her children and others whose houses to go to, tell them to go out there and get some fish. we share it. Everybody shared. The one went hunting, and one of two rabbits and caught three. Whoever he knew like rabbits, he'd get them. You just sell everything or stick everything in the freezer. You didn't have to freeze. I don't know, we didn't have an ice box, so that's more refrigerator.
Yeah,
you know
what we use? I was going to ask about that.
You know what we use? You know what a tin tub is?
No.
It's the tub. It's by a tub.
Yeah.
How can I tell you? You used to use them to wash in with the wash bowl.
Oh.
You've probably seen pictures of them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we actually use those to wash with the wash bowl. Called it a rumble with the. We would go to the condo. The ice truck would come by. We walked two blocks up to A Street, down Hickory Street. Hickory Street was a dirt road. A Street was a paved street. And they take a big old dish pan or a big tub or something. Me and my brother would go. And we'd buy a 25-cent block of ice. You can get a piece of ice like that. They handle it with something called tongs.
Mm-hmm.
And they drop it in a bucket. My brother take one in, I take the other. We carry home and you put it in a tin tub. The tin tub would line it with, you know what a crocker sack is? A crocker bag? You might call it a burlap bag.
Yes, okay.
That tub would line it with old newspapers and burlap bags. You put that ice in there and you cover it up with newspapers and burlap bags. And this is what we put the milk, the mm-hmm. butter, but there wasn't no butter, it was all on margarine. You mixed it yourself and turned it yellow with a little red. Thing did about that big. When you buy it, you have to stir it up to turn it yellow. You couldn't afford butter. But anything you didn't want small, you sit in that tub down there. You kept it on the back porch in the shade. And that's how you kept your food.
So it sounds like you did a lot of work as a child.
Well, I did.
Carrying the ice and taking care of other
children. Oh, we had to rake yards. But I always liked to beautify stuff. I don't know where that comes from. Mama, I guess. I would take go around the people's trash they grab and find old paint cans and carry them. If I came to your house and you had geraniums or any flower you could get a cutting of, I would beg you for a piece. Then I'd go over and dig dirt and plant it. And our porch had a banister like mine out there all the way around.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd paint those buckets green. I'd take basic money and get a 25-cent green paint. And I'd paint all them old rusted ugly buckets green. And I put all my flowers around it, trying to make things look good.
Oh, great.
It was no way to make that record house look good, but I thought it did.
That sounds pretty.
Yeah, we did it.
So, let's see. Those are school days, and your school, what was school like? You had your classmates and teachers and what they tried to teach you.
Oh, yeah, schools. Well, I think I don't even want to hear this because I talked about it at the library. The first black school was a two-story house. You know where Jiffy is on 7th Street?
Yeah.
There's Island Church up here.
Yeah.
Right behind there was a two-story house. And that was what they called in the colored school. They didn't use the word black, they said colored. And it grew till I had to add two more rooms on it.
Did you go to that school?
No, I hadn't come to Brandia.
Yeah.
It was a white principal, Professor William Payne, P-A-Y-N-E, was the principal. But it grew and it needed two more rooms, so they needed another teacher. So Professor William H., I think, Peck, who I was going to name that, he came from Washington, so it was rumored, here to get this job as assistant principal.
Wow.
He got a job working under Professor Payne, right around the corner there. Then, in 1927, I don't know just how this came about. We came here to train. But somehow they got picked Sweet Bill for him, for the Black Hills. That area was nothing but woods. I remember that, because I went there in 28. You come down 8th Street, where is that street you grew up in? Is it? This is Beach, Cedar, maybe Cedar, I think it's Gold Street. But it was all like white shells. You go up by the block, then you turn at another dirt road, then you got to a school. It took up about 2 blocks this way. Then you came to a path that went down through the hammock, the woods. You walk about 2 blocks out of there, then you came out into the area I lived in. Or you could take the long way around and go around 8th Street around George Lowe Grocery Store, which was on the store out there, and not have to walk through the woods. It was up to you. Okay. But they had no science room, no gym, no basketball court. But they did have grades from 1 through 12, mm-hmm. which they hadn't had over here.
I see.
They had 1 through 12. And they had a teacher for each grade. They didn't have to double their everybody in the classroom with one teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Then Professor Petsy there, I think until he died, he was wonderful. He was very fair. And he walked like he had a bow down his back. And he insisted every Friday the boys, and that was in 12th grade, wore ties and shirts to school. And he insisted that every senior, every Friday, one by one, had to speak on something in chapel exercise, the auditorium, to give them some sense of facing the public and speaking.
Wow, that's
and they
good.
Would get graded for this. They would get graded for that. And he did this, I think he's trying to build a little self-esteem.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were very little. I didn't know about self-esteem then. But looking back, I can see that they was very little. They dragged the school like, okay if I get there, okay if I don't. Shoes, because you couldn't help it. Because I'd go into school with the toes of my shoes, punch holes in them with ice pick and put wires in them to hold it together. Mm-hmm. And one would hit the back of the other foot, you got a scratch on your leg. Because you didn't have no money. This was depression we're talking about. You didn't feel bad because everybody was just alive. But you could be neat. And he told them, I don't care if you wear the same shirt or the same tie every Friday. I don't want you in here without shirt. I want you to be the young man I know you can be.
Wow, that was great to have him come here.
And when he would speak in the auditorium to the group, he would always throw out some little thought of wisdom. You are now becoming what you are going to be. I remember that one so well, like yesterday. What do you want to be? Well, why don't you dress like it? Why don't you look like it? He always has some kind
that's
of...
wonderful.
And I took in all this stuff, and I would go home and just preach it to my mom and tell me what the teacher said.
Well, you said at the library program that you gave that you went to college and you became, a cosmetologist?
I have a master's cosmetologist license or something.
Uh-huh.
I also have one where I learned that I got in the police department and learned to shoot a gun.
Well, how did you... Was it unusual for a girl like you to be going to college?
Oh, yeah, because you had no money to go.
Yeah.
That's why I was unusual. Doctor's children, or sometimes a preacher's child, a congregation would help them. Which there was very few. Very few blacks go to college. Boys had to get out and go to work to help support the family. The reason I went, my mother died, I was 18. And that's a dangerous age to don't have a parent. People look at little children and say, poor little things, but somebody going to take care of them. But 18, you're old enough to think you're grown and do what you want, and just old enough to get in all kind of trouble and doing and getting into it. That's a much dangerous age than that little baby down there. But anyway, she taught us something. My brother went to work. I got a job with the health department here in Fernandina. I had to take care, do the inventory, all the things they use, mm-hmm. all of them they give out. Plus, I did maid work. I kept the offices clean. Mm-hmm. It was something called NYA, National Youth Association.
Mm-hmm.
And he had to apply for a job. But I applied for it. My friends laughed at me. They said, you know you don't get that job. I said, why? They said, because you're colored. I said, my mother told me they ain't got nothing to do with it. Whatever you do, do it well, and you get the job. And I applied for the job, and I got the job. And I worked there until I was too old for it, because when you got 21, they couldn't hire you because it was for youth.
Oh, I see.
So I worked here and there. I worked in homes. I did hospital. I did this. Finally, I got a job at the telephone office, custodian. I worked 6 o'clock in the morning and worked till 10 in the morning. Well, I was married then. So I go home. I have this little girl come in and take care of the baby till I got home. But my brother went to the army, Japan. He stayed in Japan 4 years. He wrote back to me and told me, but he had gone to, no, he went to college later. He told me, whatever, go stay with his wife. It was at Tallahassee. They lived down there with the people associated with the college, we mm-hmm. called it Porcupine Village.
Yeah.
He told me to go to Tallahassee or tell Rose, see if there's anything on the campus you could do in a year to get certified, and he would pay for me to go.
Wow.
At his army salary. I went and checked on it, and the only thing I found was seamstress and cosmetology. Well, I didn't even want to sew to him in my dress, much as Mama made me do. But I love bothering with hair.
Mm-hmm.
But I signed up teaching me with Miss Cromer. She looked like a little short white lady. So I went back and told him what it ins and out, what it would cost. He said, do you want to do it? I said, yeah, I'll try anything. He said, what you want to do when you get? She said, I said, I'm going to open my own beauty shop.
Mm-hmm.
He said, you do? I said, yeah, I don't work for nobody. I'm going to open my shop. He said, well, we'll see, Kate. You do. He was real supportive. So I finished. I got a master's certificate. And that meant I could dress hair, or I could do hand massage, back massage, foot massage, leg massage. I could dye hair. I wasn't licensed to cut me any, but I taught myself to cut hair. I learned on my husband. And I had quite a few. I was bootlegged at that, because I didn't have no license there. I should have put that on me. But I did have a license to do these.
So that was from, you went to school at, was it Florida A&M?
Uh-huh, yeah, the black college. Uh-huh,
yeah, Japan. Okay.
So.
But you were married then?
Yeah, I was married. I carried my son with me. He was 9 years old.
Wow.
And I had to help him with his homework. My sister-in-law was pregnant, so I had to help her with housework. And I had to walk up on the campus every day and walk back up the steep hill, kind of ask for the hills. But that was okay, because I wanted to do this.
Where was your husband? Was he in the war, too?
Yeah, he was gone. So, I finished. I got my certificate. I came back home. I worked under a girl. Had a room called Nine on 3rd Street. I mean, it was a bar. On 3rd Street, a black bar. One block from Cellar. Can you picture it? A black liquor bar. One block from Center Street,
mm-hmm.
back in the 40s.
Was that called the Cat something?
No, you got with the Cat Crack.
Yeah, I heard
the
that.
Cat Crack was a little place they had behind the Palace Bar, mm-hmm. the Black Book. They couldn't go in, but they could go back in the back.
Okay.
They had little tables and stuff set up back there.
But this other bar was a regular bar.
This was a regular bar. She's my godmother.
Mm-hmm.
Off of here. Her daddy had a bakery there years before that. And she turned into a bar. It stayed just like that. So much so till when I lived down on 3rd Street, not far from it. I could stand on the porch and see the cars down there. But I put my baby in the stroller, took him downtown. I walk on the other side of the street because I was scared.
Those bar people, you never know what they're going to
do. But anyway, I ran that shop. Pretty close to 30, right over there where that other side of my house is. Because we built this house, we lived on B Street. Another house on B Street, not the first one we moved in. This was years late.
Mm-hmm.
And we were renting to go over here in this two-story house.
Mm-hmm.
And we built this house in 61.
Yeah.
And right over there, I had my beautiful house. And behind, I had a room, the bathroom and stuff, and a lounge room. I must have written there pretty close to 30 years. And I actually got tired of being inside. It's very confined. Very confined. Every time they set a fair you would like to go to, all the other ladies want to go, so you got to get them pretty. So you ain't got time to go. They have stuff to the ballpark. My son was in the band, you want to go. Or little majorettes and little girls and the man want their ass big, so that don't give you time to be ready to go. We just have missed out on a lot. But we needed the money. And the money was not a lot good, but here. Because you did a whole shampoo, press, and curl for $2 and a half. Wow.
So how many children did you have?
I had one boy.
One boy.
He died in 09. I had to go to California for life, body back home. At least I was with him the last 9 days of his life. He's in the hospital.
You have grandchildren, though?
Mm-hmm. No? Everywhere I lived, all the neighborhood children was my children. And still is, and I'm too old for that. They love to hang around me up to the churches.
Okay.
I used to write skits, little short plays, and put them on at the church. And I found out the children changed, so. The kids, well, I think parents change. I think children start having children. You can't teach somebody something you don't know yourself. So they were very, some of them were very disrespectful, not all of them. I just couldn't handle it. I was just the kids acting like kids and not like little grown folks and little bodies. So I had to get that. But the girls that were trying after me, I told them, I had a firebox full of material because I wrote my own stuff, my own things. And anything in there you want to use, you're welcome. I'll help you every way I can, costuming or diction, because that's very important, or anything. Mm-hmm. But I will not come down there and come in contact with you. I won't do that, Paul.
So, what about the segregation and discrimination? You mentioned about the black bar. What were your experiences, and how did you feel about the civil rights movement?
Like, well, this was a pro and con thing with me. Fernandina was acceptable. Fernandina went through that change so much better than most things I saw on TV or other places. The biggest conflict I saw here was among maybe teenagers at school, which was already going on anyway among themselves before they said the teachers had a little problem at first, because naturally white people did not want black people chastising their children. So how you gonna make your child mind if you can't, and I'm not trying to be funny, I'm just telling like it is. How can you make a child mind if you can't? That's when they took spanking out of school. That black woman is not gonna spank my child. She ain't putting her black hair on my child. Little stuff like that. But nothing major. Happened. And finally, kids got raped. They got on fine. The black kids joined the chorus, black kids joined the band. At first, some of the white kids would give them a hard way to go. But all they were doing was mimicking their parents. But they didn't know nothing about nothing. They just doing what they're saying, what they heard the parents say. So we would try to teach our kids, don't get into anything with them, ignore them. That kept everything cooled down a little bit. They want you to retaliate, they want you to fight back. Then you do in a big fight or something break out, they're going to put it all on you, and the authorities going to believe them, not you. So ignore them. I know it's hard to do, but that's the only way you can practice. A lot of kids started doing it. They just walk along like they didn't hear. They didn't know how to handle it. So finally, but that's the biggest. Some of the men had trouble on their jobs, because some of them had jobs that they were like over the white man. And the elderly white men, you know, they couldn't take that because they weren't used to that. They were always used to being older than black men. This was new to them. Just imagine all your life you've been able to tell me what to do, and all of a sudden I can tell you. That's got to be hard to take. So you got to look at things pro and con. You just can't look at it black and white. At least that's the way I see it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You got to look at it. Everybody's here, everybody trying to make a living. It's something I've been doing for 60 years. You can't walk here and expect me to stop it over there.
I wonder if being, growing up and living on an island, maybe island life was a little insulated and a little more people relied on one another more. Like, say you get a great big hurricane comes, and the neighbors really had, because you were kind of isolated from a lot of other things.
Yeah. Well, we did that. This black folk used to did not do it, not the most of them did. But we used to really look out for each other, so to speak. If you had about five kids, I don't know if my husband did it many times, I'd have a one. Prom time. One of those girls, mama can't buy her a prom dress. I'm doing her hair. She cried because she can't go to prom. Me and my husband buy her a prom dress. That's just the way we did things. We helped each other a whole lot and loved doing it. I know one year we went to school with a girl. You had to have a sponsor. Your mom or your dad or somebody come to prom with you. And this girl came to my house and said, "Miss Mabel, my mom and daddy will go, but I know they're going to drink before they go, and they're going to make me shave. Would you and Mr. James go with me?" We dressed in our life. And no harm done. We did. It was just close-knit. And Weiss and Rice got along beautifully. Beautifully. If I worked for you, I could kind of, I won't say take care of me, but I could kind of look to you because you would come back for me. I could be your maid. And what about children took sick? And you show real interest in how's this child getting along. Is anything you need? Has had the doctor? Well, I don't have the money. Well, call the doctor. I'll pay the doctor. Like that. And then me, on the other hand, having a sick child, nobody could appreciate what my foster is doing for me. So on the other hand, I would do anything in the world for her. And didn't know nothing about the child's addiction because I don't remember what she did for me. It just was a good relationship.
Things worked out good.
But then we had other people started coming in. And then the town started growing. If a town grows, problems go to grow. It's not going to stay like it was.
When do you think any problems started? In the 50s or the 60s maybe? Or?
It had to be before the 60s. It had to be around. Problems really started during the Depression. But all the Central Street, this part, just about all that, was owned by black people. And that's hard to believe. My grandmother lived on Central Street, almost right across from New Zion, the big black church there on Central Street, almost right across, kind of in the middle of that next block. There was what they call a pressing club. Now I think they would call it a dry cleaners. A black man owned it. Right down here, just where you get to A Street, was a two-story house a black guy owned. They had in there what we call an ice cream parlor. They sold nothing but ice cream. They lived upstairs. They had little round tables and chairs, and teenagers gathered there. Especially on Sunday after church, the guys would take the girlfriend, get a bowl of ice cream, sit down and listen to music. These were all black owned. Right around the corner for that was a black undertaker. And he took care of the, I call them the indigents. People didn't have any insurance or nothing. You'd get buried in a wooden box. And people would furnish the inside, maybe sheets or blankets or something to make it pretty. And something to put on the dead person. And they would bury them like real cheap until Huff. I know you heard of Huff and Baptiste on B Street. The funeral pile's still there.
Oh, yeah.
And it's under the name of Huff and Baptiste. Well, I knew her personally. I was a girl, but I knew. He started sending agents over here on Saturday, getting people to join some kind of insurance. You only paid $10 a week per person in the family. And for that, if you died, you got like a $500 funeral. Which meant you got a casket, and you got involved, and you got buried for $500. But that was for paying that. Mr. Oxley, he's gone. He's been there, the place been there forever. If a guy got hurt, Terrania, he would not get to the hospital in his ambulance. He would not ride a Negro. You had to get somebody in a car, a truck. If you had to lay down, you'd get somebody in trouble, get a car or something. Which I said, we didn't have a hospital here. But who survived. I look back at those days and I look at the black man today. I said, my God, what are we complaining about? We are survivors. We got lawyers. We got to come right out of peck school. We got lawyers. We got, my brother had a doctorate degree in education. And we sure didn't have nothing. We were poor as church mice. And they don't want to get crumbs because you were supposed to eat in church.
Wow. So that's...
So it just was... We had a lot of businesses. Hippers Bar, it was where it is now, but it was a bakery. Where the library is now, Martha Hippert owned that property. She didn't ever put a building on it, but that was her property. She's a black woman.
She was a black woman.
Mm-hmm. Right there. Mm-hmm. Right downtown. Yeah, a lot of stuff. But when the Depression came, if the black man does not have a job, he can't spend the money in the bar. His kids can't go to the ice cream parlor. They can't carry clothes to the dry cleaners. So those places can't survive, so they got hurt. And the result is, in order for them to survive and keep their kids in school, that's sell. Whereby everything being no money, then they practically had to give it away. And the white guy had the money, he snapped it up.
I was going to ask you about the downtown today. It seems like it's so much different.
Oh, yes.
And what do you think that the historic district is like, Bernardina history, or is it just some tourist idea of what Bernardina
now
is?
Now it's more like a tourist. It's nothing like a Bernardina history, not downtown.
So people think, this is the downtown that we love, but...
But it was nothing like that. Nothing. That bar, what's the name of that bar down there?
The Palace?
Palace. That's probably the oldest bar in Florida.
Yeah.
That was always there, as far as I can remember. Post office was always there. That bank across from the post office was not there. Mm-hmm. There was a park. And I used to babysit several of us black girls, rolling in the white babies, and we would go out there and sit on the benches and the kids playing and watch them.
Where the Keystone Hotel had been?
No.
Across the street
from the post office.
Okay, yeah. Now.
Okay. That was the park. The bank was down in the corner of 3rd and 7th. Mm-hmm. It was called First National. First National Bank. That was the only bank on the island. Oh,
so there was a lot more black presence around Center Street and downtown than there is now.
Much more. And much more souls. Now they got curio shops and all kind of little stuff. We had Park and Shoe Store. We carried shoes, men, women, and men clothing. We had Wash Truck Store. And I worked for them in the house for years. It was so the Methodist Church, it's always been there, it's white. We had an A.S. Allen department store. He carried everything, men's suits, lady clothes, children's clothes, shoes. He was the only department store. We had Fisher's 5 and 9. This was a Jew operated 5 and 10 system. And you actually could go in and buy stuff for 5 cents and 10 cents. We had Horses Drug Store. That was on the corner of 3rd and Center. On that side of the street. Because when they integrated, he had wash stores. You could, the white kids would go in and drink pints of soaks and whatnot. And a couple of black kids went in there after integration. And he didn't run them or anything, but the next day he took up all the stools.
He took the stools away so they couldn't sit back?
Could
so sit nobody could sit.
That was his way of saying, do not go sit here. I worked at this lady, and there was a drugstore. I forgot exactly which corner, but it was on the Center Street. And every afternoon, she would give me money to take her, walk up to my children, because she only lived 3 blocks down 3rd Street, and buy them soda or something, whatever they wanted. I did not know. I couldn't be in the morning about 11 years old. And it was the front door on the side. I was doing 7th Street, and I was doing 4th Street. Mm-hmm. I ran into 7th Street then. And I stood there, stood there, stood there. People just went by me, 5 minutes to count. And a girl came and said, what do you want? I said, I want 2 sodas for the kids and one for myself. She said, you have to go out and come back around and back door. And I said, why? You know, I'm already hitting you. Why? I gotta go. What I know about segregation? But child, I know I'm not being treated right. I said, why? She said, it's the rule. I got children and I carried them back home. And I told Miss Oprah's about Oprah's daughter-in-law. And she said, oh, no, you didn't. She was a fiery lady. I loved her. I liked her attitude. She said, no, you didn't. I said, yes, ma'am, you did. I said, well, I was lying. And then she put me and them children in that car and carried us back down there. She blessed that man out.
Oh.
She said, Mick will come in here to buy my soda, German soda, and her soda. And you mean to tell me you and Mick will go outside and come back in because she colored? And he said, well, ma'am, it's not me, it's a policy. And she didn't mind using the word, like DAM. She said, well, this is a so-and-so-and-so policy. She got us. She went on out that side door and brought us back right in the front door and stood us back to the counter. She said, I can give us a soda. And they gave us a soda. She told me, she said, from now on you can go in there, but I didn't ever go. Because I knew I was wanted it, and I'm not one to push in where I feel like I don't know. I won't do it today. If you make me feel uncomfortable, you won't have a problem with me. I won't bother you. I won't kiss you. I won't treat you for it. I just won't bother you. I just act like you're not even there.
Makes sense.
I find out that works.
Well, did your husband work in the shrimp industry?
No, my husband worked at the mill. He came here from Connecticut.
Uh-huh.
I call him Black Yankee.
And what did he do?
He came here because he was drafted for the Army.
Uh-huh.
And his daddy ran up. I call it a juke joint. I don't know what you call it. We're on the road going down to American Beach.
Mm.
I never was. And he opened up this place down there. But you have a piccolo and you sold fish sandwiches and you sold beer and you sold whiskey and you dance.
Mm-hmm.
But his daddy ran there. So he came to stay with his daddy a while before we went into the service. But it took so long to call him and he met me. And when he met me, I gave him the cold shoulder. And he wasn't used to that. He always was the lady's name.
Yeah.
So
you played hard to get.
I didn't know, and I meant it. I wasn't joking. I didn't like him. I didn't. He was arrogant. I was sure his picture had gray eyes, about my color. And his eyes would change colors. They'd be green sometimes, gray sometimes, brown sometimes. Hazel eyes is what they were. We'd go down there, a bunch of girls, because the walls are, most of the walls are gone. And we'd go down there and play the piccolo and dance on a Saturday night. We like 17, 18, 19 years old, catch a ride and go down. And he was down there one night, and the girls went crazy. And I went up and said, come on up here, I want you to see Steve Prassilla. And I didn't buzz. She said, come on, I want you to see Steve. I didn't know he was listening. And I said, well, my God, what is it, gold? No, I want you to see him. I said, well, I'll go up there after a while. I ain't running around looking for no Steve Prassilla. Come on. I said, I ain't going nowhere. So he told the lady, he decided he would go back there and see who that feisty, sodding girl was. He went back there and it was me. And he said he just couldn't pass that up because to him that was a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
So the next day, he was on my front porch. So he must have asked somebody. And I love dogs. He told me one of his daddy puppies was gone. And somebody told him I might have the puppy because I love dogs. That was to get to my house. Mm-hmm. I told him I ain't seen your daddy puppies. I didn't want to know you had it and get off my front porch. I didn't know he sang on radio with the golf ball for every Friday in Jacksonville.
Mm-hmm.
I had seen him right at his birthday after he was around churches, but I didn't recognize him.
Mm-hmm.
And I told my girlfriend, I said, I'll marry him already. But we just joking, you know. He came in, told me, came to my house, told me they were going to see him, and he wanted me to come here. And I don't know what made him think I want to hear him sing. And he told me it might not be because I wanted to hear him sing, but it was because he wanted me to hear him sing. I said, you're going to be singing with four people, how am I know you? He said, I'm a baritone. I said, I don't know anything about music. I just made it. But I took sick. And I had to be interned in Brewster's for 2 weeks. My boyfriend came to see me twice. And each time he was on the way to the Two Spot, which was like a black nightclub, the big bands really. He wasn't coming just to see me, he was on his way to dance.
Yeah.
I didn't like that. He never come just to see me. But James came every day according to what ship he was on at the meal and brought me boots and flowers and candy. And that made it not as much as kiss me goodnight. I tell everybody, I said, he wanted me to get good treatment.
Well, but
when he came there waiting to go to the service, he got a job to do after the call, and after he did. And he rented him a room when he crossed town by convict. He didn't care nothing about going to church, possibly, because he was Catholic. But he started caring for the church because he found out I was churchable. I think they thought that would help him out a little bit. What time did you go to church, sir? I'd be a chick, but he didn't have a car. He had to walk.
What kind of car did he have?
He didn't have a car.
Oh, he didn't.
His daddy had a raggedy car. So, the picture was really that soul mill name. Galway Duane came. There was one theater here. Black sat upstairs, white sat downstairs. We sat on wooden benches. They sat on their seats. Go back where you sit and come down. I wanted to go. The doctor forbid me to go up and down steps for 6 weeks. But I said, well, I can't go because the doctor don't want me to. And you had to go up steps when you got there. Yeah. Two flights. Yeah. He said, do you want to go? I said, yeah, I want to see the picture, but I can't go up and down the steps. He borrowed, it was a guy here at a barber shop, Bobby Holmes. He borrowed his car. Told me to get dressed. I got dressed. I said, I don't know, what are you up to? I told him I can't go up the steps. Maybe we're going somewhere else. He snatched two pillows off my bed, put them in the car, come back and pick me up, carry me down the steps, put me in the car, carry me to the theater, carry me up all the steps, set me down on the pillows. He said, now we're going to the picture.
What a guy, huh?
Aww. He was a traveler.
Aww.
And the next thing he did, my boss named Mr. Adelson. He came walk around the house and came to the back door. I told him, I said, I went to the doctor. I went to him. I said, what you doing in this woman's house? I had cold. He had gone to the drugstore and asked the man what was good for a cold and bought me a bottle of medicine and brought it to me. And he went to this office and said, who was that? I said, that's this guy been trying his best to come and see me, and I've been trying to get away from him. She said, what did he come for? I said, bring me a bottle of medicine. Can you believe that? She said, marry.
And you did.
She said, you marry him. I said, well, she said, he think enough. What guy you see cold go get somebody some medicine? They bring you flowers. They don't bring you no medicine. That guy care about you. She said, you marry that man.
When did you get married, Nathan?
44. He died in 86, I think. I know we were married 41 and a half years.
Wow.
And for, I went to Virginia, he was stationed in the service. I wanted a baby the worst in the world. And I did not get pregnant. And I started blaming him. I started telling him, you need your doctor. I can't get pregnant. You need your doctor. Never said I need. He said, it takes you to tango. You need to go. But he wouldn't go, and I wouldn't go. I was married 15 months before I got pregnant. And when I came home, I brought my baby home 4 months old. So he was born and raised right in front of
me. It was a good place to raise a child, I guess.
Oh, Dad, it was a beautiful place because everybody helped you.
Sounds great.
Everybody helped you. And you didn't get angry if they chastised your child. I was doing my skits at the church one day, and I told a girl she was acting up. I said, baby, if you keep on, I'm going to have to speak to your mother. I would never yell at her. I would never yell at my child. Never. I never would yell at her. I always called him to me, and I sat down and looked at him eye level and talked to him.
You didn't use those peach switches?
Oh, yeah, I switched him.
Okay.
But I never yelled. I never slapped him. I knocked him inside the ears. Showed him, if I go spank him, I'd get a switch his legs. Because you can danger a child like that. Your hand is heavy.
Mm-hmm.
And you're angry. You shouldn't hurt a child when you're angry. You need to cool off.
Yep.
And I always come down to his eye level because you look like a great big old John up there blasting out at him. You hear little old things, you scare me after that. You can't hear what you're saying because you're scared.
Yeah. Well, I wondered, used up most of the time, all the time, actually. I just wanted to ask you, what are you most proud of? You've lived 95 years, and you have all in the same general area, and you've seen so many things change and met so many people. What are you most proud of?
I'm proud of two things. Or three, two things. I'm very, very proud that at an early age I decided I was going to be a child of God. I went in church early, and I didn't go in church just to put my name on the list. I went in church to find out what was expected of me and what was I supposed to do and what could I do. And I always worked in the church, and I still do it around about me. Mm-hmm. I love that because I think that's the key to me doing a lot of other things I did, because I depend on the Lord. I would not depend on you or him. I might come to you for help, but I would pray before I even come to you, and I would ask the Lord to touch you. So I'm actually dependent on it. I'm very proud that I learned that early. I learned that from my mama. My mama prayed every morning, every night before we went to school. She prayed over us. She prayed openly. You can hear her pray. And she always asked the Lord to let her live to see us get old enough to take care of us. Mm-hmm. I'm very proud. And the second thing I am proud of is I had wisdom enough and sense enough to listen when she talked, because I was able to, not to, it helped me survive, but passed so much of it down to my son, and he made me real proud. I had no policeman coming at my house. I never had to go to jail. I was a jail phone call. He was not an angel.
Mm-hmm. But he didn't live on. What did he do again?
He was a musician. He played 5 instruments.
Oh, wow.
He was a musician. He parked, when he got out of the Army, he went to California.
Mm-hmm.
He parked cars for a while, and he looked for a band. Because I told him, you can't make a living on a band. You need a job in the military. Nothing wrong with you having music. But you need a job. To start parking cars, because he knew that would come in. I said, you got my blessing to stay in California. Because he wanted to stay. He didn't want to come home. But you got to know this. You cannot take your money on Saturday and go to the club and call me Monday to say you like your money. I'm not going to do it. As long as you can maintain yourself in California, you got my blessing to stay there. I can't make you come. If you get where you can't maintain yourself, I don't want you there scrawling and grounding and walking the street. Call me and say, Mama, I need to come home. And I will send you a ticket and $100 in case you need to buy something on your way home. As long as I'm in this house, you got home. But when you come home, you have a couple of months to play around. But you will find a job and you will help support this house and yourself. I didn't like telling him that. It sounded like I'd the meanest mom in the world. But I tell him that my mama told me. He needed that. He had to survive. I think I'm not going to be right all the time. Who he go call? He got to learn to depend on Skip and the Lord.
And he did, right?
I still had him. That boy never bothered me. The last refrigerator I bought, he sent me a check to pay for it. But depending on the good Lord and listening instead of turning a deaf ear, my mama, she wasn't a college graduate, but she certainly had wisdom. God blessed her with it. And I was so lucky that she passed some of it to me.
And maybe that's part of how come you're living such a long, healthy life.
And then I took care of my mama.
Mm-hmm.
If you read the Bible, you will find out there's only one commandment with a promise. And that's so when all of your father and mother at that age, baby, he promised you longevity. That's the only commandment out of all 10 you got to promise.
Hmm.
And that one, you are promised longevity if you honor your father and mother.
Well, thank you so much.
Oh,
it was so nice. Yes, we're all done.
I bet I bored you.
You probably want to get a drink of water. No,
you know what? I can talk and I can stop.
Oh, well, you've got so many things to say. Now, is that your son up there?
Yeah.
What a handsome guy.
Skip played it. I put him in piano lessons at 6 years old,
mm-hmm,
with the Catholic Sisters. After 1 year, he wanted to quit. I was late. We got around 11 years old. The bandmaster had picked his wife. He wanted to leave the sisters, so I let him leave. He went to her. But he didn't like her. He wanted the bandmaster to teach him. I said, he doesn't have time to teach piano. He's teaching the whole band. So he played around about it until he got old enough for junior high. When he got old enough for junior high, he joined the band. Picked marching band. He picked up trumpet. He excelled in trumpet. When he got out of high school, he was here about 2 years. I said, what do you want to do? I cannot send you to college, but I can send you to a trade school. You are not going to go play basketball all day, come home, eat with the TV at night. You have to do something. Mm-hmm. So he decided he wanted to be a barber. All right, James, my husband, had a cousin in Jacksonville. He went and lived with her 5 days a week, premier barber school. He finished. All the accolades, nice, did good. The fella he hired him for 2 years. Man told me he was one of the best help he ever had because he was quiet. He didn't run his mouth. He decided, Mama, I can't do this for a living. I said, why? He said, it's too much to stay in one spot all day. But I knew he was talking about because I
yeah,
I said, well, what do you want to do? He said, I want to play music. I said, well, there's no music around you. There's no way for you to get into music. He said, I could if I go to California.
So that's how he called.
No. I said, honey, Mama can't afford to send me to California. I said, find something. But I'm not going to tell you what to do because you're not going to go through with it. Find something you want to do and let me and your daddy know. And we'll see if we help you do it. He came in one day and said, Mama, I said, yeah. He always would talk to me. I decided what I'm going to do. He didn't say what I wanted to do. I caught that real quick. I said, what are you going to do? I'm going to join the Air Force. I think you got a ton of bricks. I could just see him in an airplane coming down in fire. So all I could see.
Oh, yeah, worried.
But I didn't want him to know it. I said, well, there's something to think about. He said, no, there's nothing to think about. It's what I'm going to do. Oh, goodness, this is coming from out of left field. I said, talk to your daddy? Nope. I said, we need to tell your daddy. I said, we ain't afraid on going. Oh, I already filled out the papers. And I'd be the post office such and such a morning, 6 o'clock. I said, what? Well, yes, ma'am, because I knew you probably would say, no, you know how mama are, mama. You a mama. You. I said, he got me. Ain't no way I can wag it out. I said, okay. He stayed there for 4 years. In Montana. Never been in snow in his life. And this ain't in Montana.
Oh, my.
He stayed 4 years. He got out, he called me and said, Mama, I'm out. But I'm not coming home. He said, you're not going to like this, but I'm not coming home. I said, you're not coming home. He said, I'm going to California. I said, why California? He said, I'm going to buy me a band. I said, you still? He said, I played band the whole time I was in the service. He said, I don't learn how to play. What was it? He learned to play. The bass guitar and the drums. I said, really? He said, oh, yeah. He said, I can cook on them babies, Mama. I said, well, go ahead. I said, well, I'm in California. I knew a girl out there. I used to do a hand. I told her he was coming to California. I said, okay, if I give you your name and address, and maybe you could help him find a room, because he don't know nothing about it. She said, yeah, just give him my phone number to call me. So she didn't just help him find a room. She took him in her house. I told him, I said, don't let him get comfortable. Don't let him think this is where he's going to live. Let him know he got to be on his own. You be sure to let him know that. He got to learn to be. I was determined on that. So she did just what I told her. In 2 months, she told him he had to find a place. So he did. He was parking cars. And next thing she knew, he was hooked up with a little band. That boy ended up playing piano, keyboard, trumpet, bass guitar, and drums. He played on Queen Mary. He played for big bands in California. Then he decided to start on the ball like his daddy, daughter. He said, Mama, I gotta give up this band business. They wouldn't look at the old ball he got. So he started going to smaller churches. They needed music and playing for them for free. Playing the piano, so I'm to help him out. Then he got him a couple of guys to go home and things. So 3 of them go to these churches playing for free. And the news got around and people started calling for him, putting it in, putting it in. So he started doing it, just taking up whatever they were giving. So he did that for a while. Then he told me he had a job at a school. I said, doing what? He said, I've been working here, but I want to tell you. I said, what do you do? He's on custodian. I said, nothing wrong with that. I said, to pay good. He said, oh, to pay crazy. You could out here pay crazy. I said, good. I said, you got your savings account? Yeah, I got a savings account. And next thing I knew, he told me. He worked there 18 years. And they made him head custodian. He hardly had to do any work. He had to see that it was done. And then, like people do near retirement, they start trying to get rid of you. They got rid of him and 2 Mexicans and 2 something else, foreigners. So a woman called and she's a lawyer. She heard about it. This will be a Christian school. It was this she said that school been doing that for years and hired these people and retired, they're going to retire if I don't need to get rid of them. She said, I can't get anybody to come out and openly accuse them because he threatens them that you won't get a job in this area. He said, but she called me and she wants me to get it, and he said, I will do it. He said, I can't get a decent job now at my age, so what am I holding up on that for?
Makes sense.
And he said, whatever you want me to do, I'll do it, as long as not lies, I'm not going to lie on them. But I will tell you what they did. He had hurt both shoulders while he was working, but they never lifted him out of there. Woke up some more. That lawyer got him, and they got through with that school. They had to pay for both shoulders to have surgery. They had to let him pick something he could do that wasn't heavy, and they had to pay. He went to the computer repair. They had to pay for that. Then they had to help him get a job.
Well, he spoke up and he made his case, and it was right.
Yeah, he was so proud of you. He said, see, Mama, see? I said, yeah, I see. Yeah, you want to act like it ain't nothing, but you know it's a big deal. I said, yeah, it's a big deal. Then I said, you know I love you.
Well, that's great.
But I've had an interesting life.
Yes, you have. You have, and it's been so nice to talk to you.
I stayed in Europe 18 days. I went to 7 countries. We went very good. That was an experience. I went as far, I guess, south. Well, it was the Keys. I went all the way through the Keys. So all the Keys. Sorry, the Key Largo.
Oh, I was thinking of Europe. Did you want to turn that off?
Sure. And I stayed in